It's time now for the Tuesday Talk Show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us this morning. The number to call after the top of the hour news is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. In the meantime, we ask that you hold your phone calls while we talk with our guest here initially. Welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio today. The Josephine County District Attorney, Josh Eastman. Josh, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Glad you've taken time out from, I know, your busy schedule to join us here.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. I am busy. I've seen this monthly thing and thought I needed to do it, and this month just happened to be, this Tuesday's pretty open, so.
All right. Well, we're glad that you're here. For one, really to explain your position, your job as district attorney here, because I think there might be a lot of misconceptions out there. Essentially, what is the job duties as described for the district attorney?
So for Josephine County, the district attorney, my job in our office is responsible for prosecuting all crimes that occur in the county. Some of the larger counties have municipal courts that handle city smaller level, you know, trespasses, shoplifting, those kind of things. But in Josephine County, we're the only game in town, so my office is responsible for every crime that occurs in Josephine County, whether it's in Cave Junction, O'Brien, City of Grants Pass, et cetera, from shoplifting, theft three, criminal trespass, all the way through murder and everything in between. So,
All right. That sounds like a long list of things. So how are you staffed right now? Are you adequately staffed?
So I had written that down in my little outline as something to mention. So we have been understaffed since about 2020, right after I took over. And it's hard not to take personal or at least look internal, like, oh, people have left because of me. But we're currently at 7. We were funded for 11. Then we were funded for 10 attorneys. Now we're funded for 9. But we've had 2 openings for a year and a half to 2 years. But it's not an isolated problem in Josephine County. I think last time I checked, there were somewhere 15 to 18 different counties hiring prosecutors. It's kind of a statewide issue with offices maintaining attorneys.
So we have 7 operating attorneys. Does that include yourself?
That includes me, yes.
That includes you. Okay. And we were at a point where we had
11.
Mm-hmm. 11. Okay. So what kind of situation does that put your caseload in?
So my predecessor handled high-profile cases but did a lot more of the DA stuff, because as the elected DA, I also have to go to budget meetings, LIPSIC meetings, child abuse MDT meetings, various meetings with different partners. I'm on our RAID board. I'm on the ODAA board, ONEA board, all those. But I carry a full caseload, so I think I have 50-ish cases, including 7 homicides. And because we're so short-staffed, it's hard for us to meet all of our court appearances, so I'm in the daily rotation for arraignments or other routine court appearances.
That must be an administrative nightmare.
It's busy.
You can underline that one. All right. You've talked about your attorneys. What about support staff?
So that's interesting. We've had the same support staff for as long as I've been there. I mean, there's been a few that have retired, but they stay, and they seem to stay long-term. We have 2 that have been there for almost 30 years, and the institutional knowledge that they have, I mean, we'd be lost without them. Our grand jury assistant, she has been there over 20 years, same thing without her. But we don't have turnover there, and we don't have as difficulties filling that one. It seems like once they're in there, I'd like to think it's a pretty good place to work, and they stay. So,
all right. Well, let's talk about funding. First of all, for your attorneys and your staff, is that all county funded?
It is. We are entirely general fund, and we get some pass-through grants. So we're part of the sheriff's marijuana grant. Mm-hmm. It pays for an attorney. We're part of the Josephine County Drug Court. They pay for half an attorney. The Juveniles Child Advocacy Center pays for half an attorney, but it's all general fund.
Okay. All right. All that general fund. What about your salary? I understand that you're paid partially by the state. Is that correct?
Yes. So the state salary is the same. There's all 36 DAs in the state are paid by the state. Depending on population size, they are all paid the same amount. Under 100,000 population is one amount. Over 100,000 is another. And then most counties supplement that, including our county. So it's probably, I would say, 80-20, 80 state, and then the county pays me a little bit.
All right. Well, you've outlined a pretty busy schedule. other than sitting in on cases and arraignments, your caseload itself was right at 50, which kind of is mind-boggling if we've got seven attorneys, including you. But the other duties thrown in there. Now, you mentioned ELIPSIC, and I've heard that acronym many, many times, and some of our friends, some of our listeners have, but I'm not sure everybody understands what it is.
Sorry, that is the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council. So what that is basically all the stakeholders in the criminal justice system. It's the presiding judge, me, the head of community corrections, the head of OIA, the head of juvenile, the head public defender. I think there's a couple community at-large members, and we meet bi-monthly to sort of, like recently we've been focused on deflection and what our deflection program locally is going to look like. Prior to that is what we were going to do with state criminal justice commission grants, and so it's kind of a melding of all the stakeholders. And I'd like to think in Josephine County we're traditionally short funding, or it's tight, and that is just that group is just another example of us all working together to make the best we can with what we have. So.
What we've seen here through our news organization is a great deal of cooperation. We hear primarily through the Oregon State Police and the Sheriff's Office in terms of, some of the major drug busts there. How is your office involved in all of that?
In the drug busts?
Sure.
So we are part of Rogue Area Drug Enforcement, or RAID. Mm-hmm. So that is a partnership between the state police, city police, community corrections, and then we have an attorney that's assigned full-time. So they're on call 24/7 unless they're out, and then I cover for them, because prior to being DA, I was the attorney assigned to RAID for 5 years. We also, related to that, we have a full-time Grants Pass detective that is a task force officer with the Drug Enforcement Administration, and so that gives us the ability to not only do big cases in Josephine County, but we have federal resources that assist us in bigger ones. So we are part of all of the big drug cases, and whether they stay with us or go federal, it's a case by case, but most of them stay with us.
So it sounds like, in addition to what you just outlined, you're even busier than we initially thought.
Yes.
Is that a fair assessment?
Yes.
At least your office is. Is it fair to say that you're probably the top law enforcement official in a county, generally speaking?
So I think statutorily, or that's how it is portrayed, is that I am, but I think of it more as a partnership and don't really think of it as a hierarchy myself. So.
Okay, I understand. Through our news department, we often hear cases referred to the DA, but seldom do we hear anything else after that. When the state police or the sheriff's department or city police do one of those situations where they refer to charges to the DA, what is the criteria for referring it to DA, and how is that handled once you get your hands on it?
So everything would be referred to the DA if it's potentially a crime. There's kind of three processes. One would be they establish probable cause, the patrol or detective arrests, and then that's referred, and we have to decide whether to charge by 11 the next morning. If it's a lower-level crime or some other reason that they cite them, sort of like a ticket instead of arrest, then that is referred to us, and we have typically it's 3 weeks from then to decide whether or not to charge. And then the last one is when they can't find someone, or if they're unsure whether it's a crime or not, or whether we're going to go forward, they would refer it to us. And then our job when we get that is to we analyze it to see whether the evidence is there, whether the evidence is admissible, whether all of the obtained evidence was gathered constitutionally. And then we have, currently, because of that staffing level, we run everything through a backdrop of, can we spend time on this? Is it worth our scarce resources, or should we focus on other?
All right, well, let's start with the citations, first of all. Is every citation written within your jurisdiction here come through your office?
For a crime, yes.
For a crime?
Yes.
Not necessarily a citation for speeding or I guess you can cite for possession these days. Did those land on your desk?
Cites for possession of controlled substance would go to us.
Would go.
That's a crime.
That is a crime. Okay. So there is a little bit of difference there.
Yes.
Do the officers on the street have any discretion?
On citing or not?
Yes.
Yes, they do.
Okay. All right. Do you deal with them specifically to make sure that everybody is up to speed on what those discretionary limits are?
So that discretion wouldn't be dictated by me. That's normally within the agency.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Chief Hensman, Sheriff Daniel, they have their own policies on that discretion. There are some statutory limitations on some of the more serious crimes. Like if it meets a certain threshold, you can't cite, you can't refer, you have to arrest. Or in domestic violence situations, they have to arrest, so there's no discretion there. But otherwise, that's going to be an agency-specific policy.
Okay. Fascinating. It must be a fascinating job that you have here, because I know most people's impression of the district attorney's office, they get off of TV. How close is it?
Every day is different. Every day is challenging, but it's not like TV at all. And a common thing on a more serious case when I meet with victims' families and such is that it's not like TV where we get DNA in a half hour. DNA takes DNA can take months,
I understand,
or a year. Contrary to what TV shows, I've had in over 10 years, I've had fingerprints come back one time. So they're not as common as TV would make you think. And the process is a lot – if they showed the actual process on TV, nobody would watch it because it's pretty boring as far as, you know, check-in.
You can't wrap it up in an hour.
No, yes.
Okay, all right. Just I had to ask that particular question because I know a lot of people out there are thinking, well, that's not exactly what I was under the impression of. Let's move to another – first of all, let me take a break here because I do have to pay some bills, and we'll be right back with the Josephine County District Attorney. Josh Eastman is in studio, and we'll take your calls after the top of the hour.
Save $1,000.
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Our guest, Josephine County District Attorney Joshua Eastman, is in studio today. And once again, we thank you for your time, and let's continue. What about recidivism is one of the topics that we keep hearing about here at the radio station, because we get all of the crime reports from both the city and the sheriff's department and the state police. And we see lots of the same names coming across time after time.
So it's funny, the ones that you will see over and over are low-level crimes that are normally misdemeanors, which are maximum penalty is a local jail sentence and bench probation with no active probation officer. So what we're able to do with them is pretty limited. It's, you know, 5 days in jail or 5 days work crew or 5 days house arrest, and then they're back, and there's no teeth on those low-level ones to ensure. So if it's substance use driven or if it's mental health driven, because it's bench probation, there isn't a PO to hold them accountable and make sure they go to treatment or make sure they're going to their mental health counselor, et cetera. So a lot of those repeats they're frustrating for me too, because I live here and I see them, and I wish we could do more both for the community and also for the individual themselves, because I don't think they want to be sort of the revolving door. But because they're low-level charges, there is limited teeth on my end to make sure they don't recidivate. We do have, it's pretty creative, it's Judge Wolke started a recovery court, which is for those repeat offenders and community corrections. Even when there isn't money specifically to supervise them, they have a partnership or a memorandum of understanding to try to stop some of those persistent users of resources, even though those teeth are lacking typically.
With those repeat offenders time after time after time, the system doesn't seem to be much of a deterrent. Is that a fair system? And is there a way to change that in your mind?
So I don't know if it's a deterrent, and I don't know with some of them whether more jail would help. But there's limitations on jail beds on making sure we treat everybody the same. So somebody who shoplifts can't get the maximum sentence every time because we don't have enough jail beds, et cetera. So normally on those revolving doors, there's some sort of catalyst for that criminal behavior that we have to try to get at. And unfortunately, sometimes if they're repeating misdemeanors, once they finally get a felony or they do something where we can sink teeth into them and actually have a PO and accountability, we can fix it. So I don't know necessarily if deterrence, but using the justice system sort of to try to get at the root cause of what is leading, you know, what is leading to the shoplifting all the time, or what, why are they houseless and trespassing, or those kind of things.
So. Right. Is it mostly the houseless population that we're seeing on that recidivism?
On the low level, yeah. I would think it's those or people struggling with substance use disorder.
All right, Judge, I have a story here that we ran yesterday, and I'm not going to run any names, and I know this is just an example. So you don't need to respond to this one specifically. Let's see. A man was dressed in blue, acting strange around children in the park, was placed into custody and contacted his corrections officer, was lodged in jail, held on a no-bail detainer, but has been arrested six times for violating his parole since December of last year. And I'm sure that's probably frustrating for you and frustrating for the officers and the jail staff and everyone who hears that kind of thing. But that's the kind of thing that people are hearing and are certainly frustrated with. Is there an answer for that, or it seems like all the resources putting that one person in jail that many times a year, if that could be stopped some way, that could revert to all that money being poured back into your office?
So the parole, that one would be, it's beyond my control. Parole is done through the parole board administratively. I was part of the recent sanction incentives group in the legislature that reworked the grids. But everything for a violation falls on a low, medium, or high, and then a low, medium, or high supervision level. And there's a box, the corresponding box with a number of days in custody for the violation. So the PO's hands, even if they wanted to say, okay, this is your sixth one, you have to do 6 months now. You can't. You're done. The grid says you can't do that, and in the time I've been doing this, the grids have gotten a lot softer, and so we're seeing more of this, but that's sort of a Salem down thing based on...
So we're talking about state law here.
Yes.
State law is one that is really governing this. Who makes the determination on who gets through that revolving door? In this particular situation, it falls within the grid. What about other situations?
So a new crime would go to our office.
Mm-hmm.
So say that person wasn't on parole and... whatever charge maybe would be there, that would go through us, and we would look at how many times, et cetera. And then we sort of try to common sense approach, resource dependent. Okay, this is your sixth time. Each time has to get worse, sort of how you, with a child who continues to make the wrong behavior, the consequences have to get worse. So we account for that in any sort of proposed sentence or proposed negotiations. But again, because it's low level, like that sounds like it might be maybe a disorderly conduct, that's a B misdemeanor. So the reality is it's 10, 20 days tops before they're back out.
So he's in there for a week and a half, back out on the street. I know that's frustrating for you. I know it's frustrating for the citizens. But that was some of the reasons why we're glad to have you in here so that we can really get an understanding. Do we need to go back to the state legislature? You mentioned that you'd already had been involved with adjusting those grids that appear to be a little soft here. What direction would you like to see the legislature move in some of these areas?
So I had a very...
You can put on your political hat. It's okay.
So I had a very cynical view of the legislature. We're one of the most soft on crime in the last couple sessions. I feel like they were not coming from a place of common sense. At one of the hearings I was at, they actually said they were done hearing from stakeholders. And I said, thinking to myself, what is the point of what you're doing if you're not going to listen to the people who do it day to day? I'm a little more hopeful after the last two sessions. We were listened to on marijuana crimes, and we now have tougher sentences for marijuana. Even though it's legal, if you violate the law and you have, degrading the environment, involuntary servitude, stealing water, using your well water to grow, those are more serious. And then House Bill 4002 was promising. Almost all of the attention on that has been on possession, but it actually fixed a case overturned a longstanding rule that on for drug dealers, to where our most serious drug dealers were going to get probation, and that fixed it. So my cynical view of the legislature has gotten a little more hopeful, but we'll see how this long session goes and see what – I didn't see any of too much concern, but if they end up with a supermajority, the Democrats, they may go after Measure 11, which is the mandatory minimums for violent crimes. They're trying to reduce some things from crimes to tickets because of the public defender shortage. So I'm hopeful, but cynical still.
Are you hopeful, but cynical? Where have I heard that before? Let me see. So if I wanted to contact my legislator and say, here's what I think you should do, here's what the people in my neighborhood are talking about, what bills did you have some in mind already? Or
I don't think they have numbers yet.
Not yet. Okay. But we did increase the penalties. I want to say 110, Measure 110.
Yes.
Did increase the penalties where no longer are we giving out tickets. We are making some arrests. What has that done for your system?
So because our deflection program, which is to sort of keep them out of the justice system, is not up and running yet, we are currently – because the whole premise is that they're going to voluntarily engage. So if the police arrest someone on the first unlawful possession citation or arrest, we are giving them the opportunity, short of a charge, short of a defense attorney, to go voluntarily engage, because our deflection is running behind. And I didn't think it was fair that because we are slow, beyond our own control, that they shouldn't get the opportunity that somebody will have starting December 1st. So another reason we're doing that is, I don't know how familiar locally are with the public defender crisis, but there's currently over 6,000 people charged with crimes that don't have attorneys yet, and they range from a couple days to over 2 years they've been waiting.
Oh, gracious.
So if we charge...
Josh, I'm up against a wall here. Let's continue this right after news. We'll talk about the deflection program and the shortage of attorneys. We'll be back after this.
Welcome to Tailgate.
Welcome back to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us today. If you have a question or comment for our guest today, and our guest today, the district attorney for the Josephine County area, Joshua Eastman, is in studio here. The number to call, 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back through the phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live to air your question or comment to the DA. Josh, once again, thank you for your time today. Just before we had to break for the news, we were talking about a deflection program here that we're trying to get up to speed on here in the hopes of reducing the recidivism that we see here through the local low-lying defenders. What's the status of this deflection program, and what do we expect in the future? What's the goal here?
So our deflection program, we hired the coordinator, which will be housed at the Grants Pass Sobering Center. And so we have sheriff's office, city, our office, and probation and the sobering center all working together. So what it will be is that somebody, instead of going to jail for a PCS, if they choose to, the officer has discretion to say, hey, the DA gave me permission. If you want to go to the sobering center and complete a substance use assessment, and I think they're going to require 10 contacts with that a peer support specialist within a 30-day period, these charges go away. The DA says, I can just throw away this controlled substance. And the reason for that, we chose to do that, is sort of that's what 4002 envisioned. It'll keep them out of the system, keep our scarce public defenders available for more serious. And the hope is that they will get that assessment, because what we found locally during the 110 era is that the hardest or the biggest barrier to getting into treatment was that official ACE, I think it's ASAM, I don't remember what it stands for, but it's a 3-hour evaluation on how severe the addiction is. And so our deflection program, the emphasis is on getting that, because that's sort of your ticket to go to all these. We already have a robust recovery and treatment locally, it's just whether we can get them in the door. So deflection hopefully will facilitate them getting that assessment, and then there are going to be peer support specialists within the treatment agencies that follow them and keep tabs on them for a while, short of criminal justice system and appeal.
All right. Now we're talking about primarily people with facing possession charges of illicit substances.
Yes, only possession of illicit substances.
That's all we're talking about with yes. with. But that's a fairly significant portion of our crime problem, is it not?
Possession alone is. Let's see. I think.
Or at least the drugs.
Yeah. The drugs are probably the catalyst for. I want to say 80, 90. I don't have a hard number, but the overwhelming majority of all theft or property crime, stolen cars, burglaries, identity theft, all of that, yes.
All of it goes to drugs. And with a possession charge facing me, is there a level that we won't even consider deflection? Does it depend on quantity?
It does. So the 4002 created the unclassified misdemeanor for any amount, and then the existing law was over 2 grams of meth is an A misdemeanor, over 10 grams of meth is a felony. Heroin and fentanyl are half those amounts. So under 1 gram is a U misdemeanor, 1 gram to 4.999 grams is an A misdemeanor, and over 5 is a felony. Heroin's pretty much gone, but fentanyl follows the same weights. So the deflection will apply to the misdemeanors because it's sort of the legislature and our office and the philosophy is that if you have those other weights, those are more in line with dealing or subsistence dealing to support your own habit. And so those are not deflection eligible. It's the misdemeanor possessions.
It's misdemeanors that we're talking about. Do you have a percentage on those misdemeanors when we're talking about possession charges? How many are that lower level?
So I haven't tracked since September 1 when we started again. I think we'd had 40 referred. I have pre-110 numbers, and we average between 300 and 500 possession charges a year.
Oh, gracious. Okay. All right. And during that pre-110, when we were just citing, then we were one of the top cities and Earth's top counties in the state in terms of
– We were the top.
Yeah.
We are the only accurate – in my opinion, the only accurate sample because Chief Hensman wanted to try it and wanted to. So he had his officers citing for every possession. And it's an abysmal number that even called. And actually, nobody got treatment. And my favorite stat of all of that time is that because of the 200 however many million dollars spent, it ended up being about $11,000 per phone call. So very inefficient and right around the time that we had a 500% increase in overdoses. And
okay. Now, I realize that you're one person, but you do have some influence here. Which way would you – is there an answer there in your opinion? And this doesn't have to be a legal one. Just how do you feel about that? Which way do we need to go in order to rectify the situation that this county is facing?
With drugs?
Yeah, with drugs.
So I've always thought that a supply and demand side is important. So I think prevention, which Juvenile does, and you know, inform them up front of kind of like DARE, but I don't know if it's DARE anymore, but similar demand side. So if we can get these people engaged in treatment and pro-social circles and all of that, they seem to do better. But what we've been lacking and what the part that's not talked about in 4002, but it's the reason that I served as a DA expert on getting it passed, is it fixes the supply side. So there was this 2021 decision that made it to where possession with intent to transfer was no longer a delivery. And so the example I used in the legislature is if I'm caught with 10 pounds of methamphetamine, but they didn't have me actually handing it to you, and I have no record, that's a probation sentence. And in my opinion...
Oh, gracious.
So we fixed that to now it's codified to delivery includes possession with intent. So that same fact pattern would be a 5-year in prison sentence. So, but possession being a crime also allows us now to all of the detectives and their enforcement capabilities are back. So now that it's a crime, a dog alert allows you to apply for a search warrant. If they're arrested, you can search incident to arrest. It brings back all the tools to get the supply side. So as long as I think you have to address both the addiction and the source of supply, and hopefully, if the federal government addresses some of the border issues, that would be less coming in, and then with all the reinvigorated tools we have, we can hopefully attack that side and then hopefully get more engaged people engaged in treatment. And then that's the hope. So
the supply side appears to be one that could be addressed efficiently. And when we're talking supply side, you said heroin is probably not a factor much anymore, but fentanyl, methamphetamine, are there others that we should be concerned with?
So fentanyl has all but replaced heroin. So mm-hmm. the two main ones that we have locally are methamphetamine and fentanyl, and then cocaine is on the rise.
On the rise again then?
Yes.
All right.
And apparently, because I got the opportunity to tour San Ysidro Port with Border Patrol a couple weeks ago, and my understanding, if I'm remembering correctly, was there some weird international treaty that lapsed so where they can grow the coca plant or whatever again in South America. So that's part of the reason for the increase in cocaine. But locally, we're talking about meth and fentanyl.
All right, the supply.
Yes.
Where's the supply coming from? Coming up out of California is eventually coming across the border. Not the Oregon border, but the U.S. border with Mexico. Is this the situation that's supplying all of this this poison to Josephine County?
I can say comfortably that everything comes from Mexico originally. So when I was assigned a raid, and now when I fill in with raid, you get to a certain level or weight locally, and then it goes to one or two people in California before you lose it south of California.
I see. So if we can control the supply coming in here, and is there anything that you can share with us about how we're starting to control that? I know we see some big marijuana bust here for illegal grows, but that's not coming out of Mexico. What about the harder drugs coming?
So locally, we have quite a few really big cases. I have to be careful talking about them because
I understand
they're either pending or haven't been charged yet. But again, with that Grants Pass detective being at the DEA full time, that's allowed us to do. I don't know if you remember, we had one last year that led to 24 people being arrested, 9
yes.
search warrants at the same time. So with all of our scarce resources, those big cases like that, those take out whole. What RAID would call a drug trafficking organization, which is
had the big press conference at the police headquarters
yes.
for that one, yes.
So we have the ability to do those again because of those federal partnerships, and then RAID is very busy, but they stay kind of below the radar and they don't do press releases; they just do the work, and so.
Right. Well, we have recently seen a couple of major busts, primarily along I-5, and I think out of Douglas County mm-hmm. is where we saw those. So we wouldn't be talking about those specifically, but those were some pretty heavy, I want to say 20 pounds worth of methamphetamine, along with a few other drugs. But they're all coming up through I-5. Mm-hmm. So do we have a pulse on I-5? Is there a way, or is it just... blind luck or hard investigation that results in those major busts?
So there used to be the ability for the state police. They used to have an interdiction team that would things they're looking for, rental cars, lots of air fresheners, etc. But there's been some changes to case law with Kate Brown appointees that you can't ask questions unrelated to the reason for the stop. So say you pull somebody over for speeding, but you kind of have it's a rental car, it's rented for one day, there's 12 air fresheners. You used to be able to run a dog while they're obtaining mm-hmm. their documents, that the dog alerts you're in. Sort of those proactive cases are all but gone in the state system because they changed the case law to where you can't use a dog unless you already have a pretty good suspicion that there is a crime. So a lot of those big ones are either going to be handled by the feds or it's hard investigation and its details aren't being released because it's an ongoing investigation. But as far as proactive stateside, it's next to impossible.
So if we really want to get a handle on this, we need to keep an eye on the legislature.
That one was done by the Supreme Court and you can't fix it.
Ah, okay.
But voting for a judge is... matters too. So,
all right. Let me ponder that one, ladies and gentlemen. While you ponder this, we'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Josephine County District Attorney Joshua Eastman is in studio here. 541-472-1270 if you have a question or comment for the DA today. And just before we went to that commercial break, we did mention judges. Let's clarify that we're not talking about our local judges here.
I am not talking about the trial level judges. Mm-hmm. What I was referring to is the appellate court and the Supreme Court judges who are all...
We're talking about state Supreme Court.
Yes. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Oregon Court of Appeals and Oregon Supreme Court. The all but one were Kate Brown appointees, and they're all like-minded and what I would consider soft on crime. They've overruled tons of longstanding precedents that make my job and police's job more difficult. So that's what I was referring to as voting for judges.
All right, okay. Wanted to clear that up before you had to go back into court locally here. All right. Joshua, we've learned an awful lot about the district attorney's office and what's going on locally. And our people really needed to hear some of this to find out exactly what's going on, because I know it's frustrating when we put out a news release, when you put out a news story saying this person's been arrested six times in the last year. That raises some eyebrows. But we understand what's happening now a little bit more, and there are ways to fix that, we hope. And part of that is deferment that we're talking about?
Deflection.
How far away from getting an active deflection program are we?
2 weeks.
Two weeks.
December
all right.
December 1st.
December 1st. It happens. Okay. Mm-hmm. Send us a press release when that happens.
I will.
All right, and we'll make sure that that gets out. In the meantime, we've covered an awful lot of what's going on in your office right now. Is there an area that we need to know about that we haven't talked about today for the district attorney's office here?
No, not really. Just to reiterate that. I'm not trying to make excuses, but we're doing the best we can with what we have, and I'm 10 to 12 hours a day active attorney like the rest of the DAs I have. We're short-staffed, but fortunately they are all either from the area or have made this home, and so this is our home too, and so many of the frustrations we share, but a lot of them we try to address, and a lot of them, or some of them, are beyond our control, but we are all vested in this county and community, and we'll keep fighting the good fight. I don't want to end on bad news, so I won't say, even if we were fully staffed and we charged everything, then we'd run out of defense attorneys. But we'll just say we do have a new attorney starting in a couple weeks, so we're up to 8, and hopefully I can get a law clerk or two, which is mutually beneficial. And so things are looking better, and the commissioners, irrespective of who it is, have all 100% supported my office and not cut, and understand that I'm directly tied to sheriff, so however many people he has out there investigating, I need to sort of
balance it out. The scales of justice,
yes.
As a matter of fact,
yes.
Only we're putting them all on one side right now, but that's all right. Just enforcement and through the legal entanglement, we'll let the judges sort it out after that.
Yes.
So you talked earlier about the statewide shortage of defense attorneys. Mm-hmm. How serious is that right now, and does it affect Josephine County?
So we get an updated list once a week. That last time I checked, there were over 6,500 individuals statewide charged with crimes that are waiting for attorneys. Locally, we've managed to avoid that, partly because of our staffing. The only case where that's been an issue for us is that 24 defendant one. There's still 10 of those individuals waiting for an attorney, over a year waiting. I think it might, if we don't find more defense attorneys in the coming years, it will get worse, because a lot of our defense bar is maybe going to retire, and then we're in the situation where, like, I believe last time I heard, our neighboring county had 1,000 themselves that were out of custody charged. And there's a case that came out of the Ninth Circuit that if somebody's in jail for attempted murder or robbery or rape, and you don't get them an attorney in 7 days, you have to let them out. So these people out are not necessarily individuals we want out. They're not trespasses or nonviolent offenses. It's everything short of murder. If you don't give them an attorney within 7 days, they're out. So it's a self-created crisis, but it's pretty drastic.
All right, and we're probably talking about public defenders as opposed to private attorneys.
Yes.
All right, but we're still in relatively good shape here in Josephine County.
Other than that big case.
The big case.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one, and we'll rely on you to keep us informed. All press releases are welcomed here at the studios of KAJO. Once again, Josh, well, one last thing. What do people really need to take away from today's program in terms of your office and your staff?
I would just take away thought or final thought would be that we're doing the best we can, and we are fighting an uphill battle against staffing and a sort of soft-on-crime legislature that keeps changing the rules and making it harder for us to do our job. And so I try to navigate and reflect the wishes or the sort of temperature of our community the best I can within that system.
So. All right, Josh, I want to thank you very much for your time today. I know you're a busy, busy man. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Our guest today, the District Attorney for Josephine County, Joshua Eastman. Stay tuned. News coming up next from the Salem Radio Network.
Farmer.